Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. I've missed you.
I've missed you. We've had to put it off a few days, hadn't we?
I know. We're batch recording these guys because I'm going across the pond next week. So this will be our last episode for a couple of weeks and then we'll be back.
Hopefully you can hold off and wait for us.
Yeah, you can. I believe in you. So we're just going to jump into this episode. Elena, as a true crime junkie, I'm sure that you've learned by now that a victim is more likely to be murdered by someone they know rather than a stranger, right?
Right.
Being murdered by an absolute stranger is a really scary thought. Like, I could just go to the grocery store and someone could murder me in the parking lot. You know, wrong place, wrong time type of situation. How many times have you heard about stuff like that? Oh, just wrong place, wrong time.
Right.
But what's more frightening to me is the thought that someone I know could be capable of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what today's case is about. So, Stephanie Shay Graham, she went by Shay, was born February 9th, 1987 in Columbus, Georgia, to her parents, Kevin and Lisa Graham. She and her father were very close. She was the first child they had, so they loved outdoors and racing and hunting. I mean, there are pictures of them in like matching camo outfits, and she was such a daddy's girl. And she was a passionate supporter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, which, according to their website, is a nonprofit organization that promotes patriotism. They strive to preserve American history and secure the future of America through better education. Kevin Graham owned a construction company where they lived in Russell County, Alabama, at this point. And Shay was really interested in working with him in some capacity in the future. It was a really successful business. And I saw reports that she was in college to become an accountant so she could be his bookkeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And she was working towards that. Like I said, she was in college. She had graduated high school early at just 16 years old. Didn't you graduate at 16?
Or 17?
17.
Yeah, a year okay. Early, but yes.
Yeah. But all of that would come to a screeching halt, unfortunately. On July 6, 2007, in Russell County, Alabama, a phone call came through to 911. A man was driving down a rural road. It was in the wee hours of the morning. And he thought he saw a body laying on the side of the road. He didn't stop. He just kept driving. So he was like, just thought y'all should go check that out. Police arrived on scene and found a female victim. She was laying on her back. She had been wearing a dress that was kind of like hiked up a little bit, and her panties were pulled down around her calves. So they immediately suspected sexual assault.
Mm.
They saw four gunshot wounds to her chest. But they hadn't bled. So even, you know, most investigators would look at that and say, okay, those were done post-mortem. You don't necessarily have to take a victim's body into the morgue to have the ME rule something like that because, I mean, they've been around a while. So they start looking for the kill shot and they found it in the back of her head. Ooh. So, yeah. So someone had shot her in the head and then shot her four times again in the chest, which is totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot to go on at the scene for police. There were some spent shell casings laying around. The victim's flip-flops were kind of kicked off and askew. There was actually a big wet spot in the dirt, and they thought, that could be really important because, like, it probably was from a car leaking or, like, a radiator or something like that. So they were hopeful that that wet spot would be significant in some way. They collected everything they could. Of course, they're doing all of this by flashlight, and they photographed the scene. The victim's body had been sent for autopsy, and the ME found that she had not, in fact, been sexually assaulted. There was no semen found on or in her body, no trauma to her vagina, nothing, no indication. So they're wondering, like, could this have been staged? And why would somebody make it look like a sexual assault? Like, that just is weird. It seemed really personal to them. They got a hit on her fingerprints, and it wasn't long before they identified the victim as Stephanie Shea Graham. Was just 20 years old when she was killed. Next, the investigators went to notify her family and see if they could obtain any information as to who might have done this to Shay, who would want to harm her in any way. Actually, there had been a missing persons report filed on her, and I'll get to that in a minute. But, so, it wasn't hard for them to find her parents and everything because the missing persons report had been filed many, many hours before or after her body was found.
Oh, okay.
So one of the detectives, Lieutenant Taylor, had actually gone to school with her mom, Lisa, like from when they were in elementary school. And it was him that decided, you know, he would break the news to Shay's family. They were absolutely distraught, as you can imagine. Her mother was wailing and sobbing, and her father was stoic, trying to keep it together for the family, but completely torn to shreds. Remember, they were besties, her and her dad. And she had a little brother, too, and he said in an interview that he had never seen his father cry his entire life until that day.
No.
So let's get to the missing persons report. They did inform the investigator that Kevin had filed a missing persons report because Shay was out the night before with her friends. And when they got up that morning, she had not come home. At first, they just thought, oh, maybe she's staying with friends. But the more time went on, they couldn't reach her. By like 6 p.m. that day, they were like, okay, something's wrong. So her dad filed the missing persons report.
Wow, 6 p.m. That's kind of early.
Well, the whole day had gone by.
Yeah, I see.
So, yeah, I mean, they woke up and, I mean, that's quite a long time to not hear back from your kid, you know, like, and she was pretty responsible. She did have some things going on, which I'll tell you about in a second, but overall, she wouldn't just not get back in contact with her dad. She just wouldn't. As the conversation progressed, something interesting came to the surface. The family explained that investigators should look at her ex-boyfriend, Larry, who went by Bubba. They had a very tumultuous relationship. He was emotionally abusive. They got into fights all the time in front of people, and it was just really toxic. Like, their fights had gotten physical at times. So this kind of started to seem like an obvious suspect for her family. Well, when detectives found Bubba, they found his booty incarcerated. He was in jail.
Oh.
But even though he was in jail, they weren't going to write him off just yet because he very well could have orchestrated this whole thing from behind bars.
Master
so plan. They went to the jail to talk to him, and they asked him, you know, do you still talk to Shay? I know y'all are broken up. Y'all have had a rocky relationship. He said, yeah, we still talk. I call her from the payphone over there here at the jail. In fact, he had called her the night before, the night she was murdered. But she didn't answer. Her friend Amy did. Mm. Amy told Bubba that Shay was hanging out with her new boyfriend, Glenn. Yeah. He was very upset. And he's like, why are you answering her phone? And I don't think he really got a straight answer about that. But at this point in the investigation, when he's telling them how the conversation went, he's like, wait a minute, why are you asking about Shay? Is she in trouble? You see, Shay had a court date coming up for something that happened with her friends several months prior.
Oh, girl.
Shay was riding with her friends in a car, and a gun went off in the side, inside the car.
No.
And blew out one of the windows.
Well, thank God it was a window and not a person.
Right. Well, when police got there, they arrested Shay. And she said she wasn't the one who fired the gun, but she was charged with aggravated assault. Her dad paid $100,000 bail to get her out. Yeah, and a hearing was scheduled for July 6th. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't have more information about that whole incident and why she was the one who was arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, if she was the one who had the gun. I don't have any of that information and I couldn't find it. But it's not, like, those details are not important to the story. What's important is that her dad posted bail for $100,000.
Gotcha.
That was quite a whoa, you know?
Yeah.
Now, they wanted to talk to Shay's new boyfriend, Glenn, because now they're thinking maybe he's the last person to see her alive.
Mm-hmm.
He said they hung out with her friend Amy. They were drinking when suddenly Shay said, I've got to leave. I've got to go meet someone. And while he did ask some questions like, who and why, you know, the usual suspects, she stayed pretty vague about it. So he and Amy drove her to the gas station and he watched her get into a black truck.
Hmm.
And in the driver's seat was a black male who he didn't know. He told investigators Shay said she had to meet this friend, and would Glenn meet her back at her house afterwards? Well, she never showed up back at her house, so he got tired of waiting for her, and he packed up his stuff and left. He was very annoyed because she had gotten in the car with some other guy, and she wouldn't tell him who it was, like, why? So he kind of got suspicious, like, who's this other guy?
Mm-hmm.
So now investigators were like, well, maybe he got mad at her and he was jealous and maybe here's our motive. Maybe here's our guy. But they needed to verify this whole thing with Amy. So they brought her into the station for questioning. She verified pretty much everything. She was with Shay and Glenn that night. She corroborated Glenn's story and said that she did have Shay's phone. She did receive that call from Bubba. Apparently, Amy's phone had died and Shay was letting her borrow it for the night, which I think is weird. I wouldn't like give my phone to a friend even if their phone had died. I mean,
well, especially if you're going with someone else.
Elena, it's like you're reading my notes because that's exactly it. When you're being dropped off somewhere at some gas station with somebody that you won't really tell anybody who it is and you don't have your phone, like, that's weird to me.
Yeah, that does not make sense.
Yeah. So they end up telling Amy that Shay was dead. And she just kind of sat there like, Well, what happened to her? Like, totally not how they expected her to react, because...
Yeah, I would be
distraught. She was your best friend, and you just saw her last night. Not to mention the fact that nobody saw her after you dropped her off at the place that you dropped her off, so maybe you saw her right before she was murdered, or maybe you... You know what I mean? Like, how does that not... I don't know, she just didn't seem too phased. And, you know, the minute they start feeling a little bit suspicious about Amy, because it's like every person they talk to, they're like, oh, maybe it's you. Amy said, I think I know who the guy was in the truck. She was pretty sure it was this guy named Kenneth Walton. He goes by Kenny. They found out that Kenny Walton was actually a really good friend of her dad's and of the family, really. He was, like, part of the family. He, and I say was, because Kenny had worked for Shay's dad for a while and was recently fired for wrecking, like, almost $1 million worth of equipment.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And it wasn't because he wrecked it. It was the way he acted after he did so. Instead of coming into the shop and being like, oh my gosh, sorry, boss, it was an accident, he kind of got rude and a little bit violent with Kevin for some reason.
Wow.
And Kevin was like, you gotta go, buddy. You're done.
Come on,
so
Kenny.
That was like, yeah, come on, Kenny. That was the end of the relationship of the Graham family's, you know, close friendship with Kenny. That was it. Bridge burned. So now investigators are thinking, Kenny, maybe it's Kenny. they're thinking maybe he is like getting revenge on the family. So they got Kenny into the station. This is like a game of telephone interrogation. He said he and Shay had remained friends, actually, despite the falling out he had with her dad. And said, yeah, I did meet up with her briefly that night. He said he received a call from her about 10 p.m. and she wanted to talk to him about something. It was her court date that was coming up and she wanted to talk to him in person about it. So he says, okay, meet me at the service station and we'll talk. So he said she gets dropped off by her friends. She got in his truck. They talked for a minute. She wanted him to find her a car so she could leave town because she had no intention of going to her court date. So she just wanted to, like, peace out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And he told them, I told her, I can't help you with that request. Like, I can't get you a car. So she got out of her truck and she walked off and I drove away. And the detectives are now, like, a little bit more clear on the timeline. Now they have an extra step. They have confirmation that she did speak with Kenny. But what happened to her after Kenny and her parted ways?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't really believe that she went anywhere else. They didn't believe that they parted ways.
Hmm.
Something about, like, his demeanor was just not sitting right with them. He wouldn't look them in the eye. His body language was really sus, you know?
Oh, no.
So they showed him pictures of the crime scene to see, like, what his reaction would be. And he also didn't have much of a reaction other than saying, you know, I felt uncomfortable looking at those because Shay was like a sister to me. There really was no shock or emotion of any kind, though. Well, guess what they got when Kenny was still in the interview room?
Fingerprints.
They actually got something better than fingerprints. They got surveillance footage.
Oh.
That they had requested from the gas station. Imagine that. A gas station with CCTV? Well, what they saw on the tape confirmed what Kenny said about him and Shay meeting up. She did get into his truck for a little bit. They did talk. But the footage says they did not part ways. The results say that was a lie.
Uh-huh.
The video shows him driving away with her still in his truck. So she's sitting right there in the passenger seat and he drives off into the dusk. I was going to say sunset, but it was nighttime. He drives off into the darkness. So they go back into the interview room because he's still there. And they turned up the heat. They said, Kenny, we know you're lying. We know you're lying because we have footage that you're lying. They said, we know you know what happened to Shay. So tell us what happened. Kenny just sighed and he lowered his head. And he starts telling a new version of events. Kenny says that he met with Shay, just like he told them. The conversation was true about her wanting him to find a car for her. She didn't want to go to her court date. And he said, the difference is that I told her I would find her a car. So I started driving out to this rural area. I told her that's where the car was that I was going to get her. And while they were driving, she's like, I really need to pee. Can you pull over? So he pulled over and she gets out. She pulled her panties down. She peed, which explains the big wet spot in the road. Explains why her panties were down and there was no sexual assault. As she's peeing, he shot her in the back of the head. And she fell flat on the ground.
Why?
He exited the truck. He walked around and shot her 4 more times in the chest just to make sure she was good and dead. I mean, while she's peeing, man, literally, to kill someone anyway, but while they're in the most vulnerable and to leave her there like that, just...
Yeah, I have no words.
That's messed up. Messed up. Well, investigators are like, whew, they got his confession. They were relieved a little bit. You know, they felt like they were going to be able to wrap things up quickly, get her family some closure. They're, you know, packing up their notebooks and stuff. And Kenny said, well, I got to tell you something else, but I can't.
Oh.
And Lieutenant Taylor's like, what's that? What?
Just get it off your chest.
Yeah, he's like, just tell me. And he's like, what do you mean you want to tell me the entire story? Like, what more could there be? You just said you killed her and you did it. Like,
yeah.
What more is there? What could there possibly be other than that? What Lieutenant Taylor would hear next would chill him to the bone. Kenny said that he was actually asked to kill Shay.
I knew you were going to say that.
By Lisa Graham, her mother.
What?
Yeah. He said Lisa provided him with a 9mm pistol. It was hers. And she said, she's got to go. He said they had multiple conversations about it. Apparently, Lisa was really mad at Shay for getting into trouble with the law. And she really resented her because Kevin posted that $100,000 bail. In fact, she begged Kevin not to. She's like, do not spend that money on her. There was a couple comments in some of the interviews that I watched with Kevin, her dad. And just some of the things that he said made me feel like Lisa was probably jealous of their relationship.
Yeah.
Shay's whole life. I mean, starting in the delivery room, like Kevin said that he basically held the baby the whole day. And Lisa was like, give me my baby. Give me my baby.
Wow.
And just they grew very close and... They were close her whole life, and...
I mean, most mothers would love that for their kids, to have such a good bond with their father.
Right. But not her, because she was a nasty piece of crap.
Sounds like it. Wow.
So, before they get in touch with Lisa about this, they're like, How are we going to verify this story? We've got to find that gun. So they got a search warrant immediately to search the Graham home. They asked Kevin, because Kevin was there, Lisa was not there at the time. They asked Kevin if he could account for all of his guns, like what kind of guns he had, where they were located in the home. And then they asked if Lisa had any guns. He said, yeah, she's got a handgun, and it's in the safe with my handgun. They took inventory of all the guns in the home. When Kevin opened that safe, there was only one gun in there. Wow. And it was his. Lisa's 9mm was missing.
What an idiot.
Police said, do you have any idea where her gun might be? And he said, it's probably over at Papa's house. He's probably cleaning it for her. Papa was her granddaddy, and he lived just down the road. So they decided to bring Lisa in for questioning, and she was as cool as a cuke. She was sitting there. I watched some of her interrogation tape, and she explained how, yeah, you know, I was talking to Kenny one day about Shay and how she was just like out of control and something needed to be done about her. And Kenny said, you want to get rid of her? And Lisa was like, well, I don't know what else I should do. Like, I just don't know what else to do. She told police she didn't actually mean she wanted him to kill her. Then she breaks down crying and screaming and wailing again. She says, I can't believe he thought I really meant that I wanted him to kill my own daughter. Well, before you start thinking, well, maybe she's telling the truth. Like, maybe she really did just say things she didn't mean. One of Lisa's neighbors came forward and said, he, too, was asked to kill Shay by Lisa for $5,000.
Wow.
So.
I mean, okay, but how did Kenny get the gun if you really didn't mean for that to come across that way?
Well, I'll tell you later how Kenny got the gun, but
okay.
It always amazes me when people are hiring a hitman and they ask multiple people.
Yeah.
You know, they always go around asking multiple people. It just, the brazenness, like the narcissism that you would think you'd be comfortable enough to ask multiple people. That always like blows my mind.
Yeah.
Well, they knew Lisa was lying because you know what? They went to Paul's house. Mm-hmm. And they found Lisa's gun, and they did send it off for ballistics, and guess what? It was a match. It was a match to the bullets that were recovered from Shay's body.
So, Papa had cleaned the gun already?
So yeah, she took the gun to him to be cleaned. I don't think the cleaning of the gun, and if it was cleaned, was really the hindrance because they were able to test the striations on the bullets.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
And they could prove that they were fired from that gun. So that was it. That was it for her. They arrested Lisa, charged her, and they announced that they were going to seek the death penalty for her. I was surprised by this next part. It took them about 5 years to take those clowns to court. Like,
what in the world?
Yeah, there were a bunch of different things that happened over the years. One of the things was there was an issue with the building that they were going to hold court in. Like, apparently it was, like, unsafe. There was asbestos or something. Then Lisa's attorneys tried arguing about this. So the first trial they tried to do for Lisa, the judge declared a mistrial because he was really, like, his health was deteriorating. And, yeah, so he declared a mistrial because he couldn't finish the trial. Like, he couldn't finish presiding over the trial.
Oh, no.
So Lisa's attorney were arguing about that whole thing, and it just kept getting delayed and delayed. Well, in 2012, Kenny was like, Listen, I'm just going to plead guilty because I don't want the death penalty. So he pled guilty to manslaughter and he was sentenced to life in prison. Lisa, however, no, ma'am, she was not admitting to anything. She was going to stick with her story. She did not order the hit. No, not my baby. She pled not guilty, so she went to trial. And at the second trial, so remember the first one was a mistrial, Kenny testified against her, saying that Lisa hadn't just asked him to kill Shay once. They had multiple conversations about it, and it had been going on for a while. Like, she had been asking him periodically. He said he and her met in a parking lot that day. She gave him the gun. She told him what to do. She gave him very specific instructions. Even down to the missing persons report. Like, we're going to file a missing persons report. Like, we're looking for blah, blah, blah. Well, she was found guilty and she was sentenced to death. The jury was not having any part of her at all. She did file an appeal because, you know, they do that when they think, you know, when they're narcissists and they think, exactly. Well, in July of 2019, the Alabama Court of Appeals was also not having that. They upheld her conviction because, well, she had her daughter murdered and she's where she needs to be. She's actually the fifth woman on Alabama's death row, which I think is crazy. The other four are also child killers, so good riddance, you loony, all of you. According to the Alabama Bureau of Pardons and Paroles, Kenny Walton is actually eligible for parole this year. In October.
Well, I mean, he really felt sorry for what he did, and that's, I mean, I'd like to say that's the main reason he pled guilty.
Yeah, his hearing is the 18th, October 18th.
Coming up.
And like I said, we're recording this episode early, so by the time it airs, I think it's going to be after October 18th.
Oh, okay.
So I'll try and update you guys on that when we get back from our little break, but... Yeah, he pretty much crumbled immediately. I mean, I got the sense in his interrogation that he felt really bad for what he did. But again, it's just like, you can feel bad all you want and you can have remorse, but like, it was so calculated. He was like, hey girl, you know, like that was a friend of hers. That was a family friend.
Yeah.
And he just lured her out there and did her so dirty. Like, anyway, but Lisa, there's so few words in the English language that could even touch what she is.
I mean, to have your daughter murdered. Wow.
Because she's 20 and she's figuring things out. She's trying to, kids make mistakes and like, you're the parent.
Yeah.
Get a life.
Wow, that is, what a mess.
A mess. A mess. And that's all I have for you for that story. Just shocking. Like, you guys know that I can pretty much talk the hind legs off a donkey, but I have literally almost no words for this woman in this case. I just... child killers, people who kill their own children, I just can't even. But like her adult daughter, I don't know. It's it's not different. It's just, it feels so gross to me. Just the way it all happened.
Yeah, I have no words. I'm sorry. I'm just like, I keep saying wow. And
I don't know. Speechless. Totally speechless. Yeah.
Well, what a story, Candace.
Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it.
See y'all later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.